Welcome to today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Monday, May 6th. I'm your reader, Teresa Whitaker, and here is our first story. Pennsylvania buyer blames Iowa breeder for puppy who died. Does Iowa need tougher law? This is by Aaron Jordan. Lauren Stevenson wanted a Maltese Papillon mix, or Papatese. Puppy just as cute, energetic, and hypoallergenic as her 13-year-old Papatese Dexter. The Philadelphia resident searched online and found Southeast Iowa Country Puppies in Lee County. She put down a $250 deposit on a male Papatese, born December 15th, and waited until he was old enough to leave his mother. Within hours of picking up the puppy, named Lemmy, from a transport van February 27th, the dog was throwing up blood, Stevenson said. She took him to the pet hospital twice, and he died within a week. Not only was that painful, heartbreaking to witness, but I am now nearly $8,000 deep in vet bills for a dog I owned only for one day, Stevenson wrote in an email to the Gazette. Stevenson, 29, blames the breeder and Iowa for not having a so-called puppy lemon law that would require breeders to reimburse buyers if a puppy gets sick or dies from a pre-existing condition. Southeast Iowa Country Puppies owner Heather Anderson says the dog had a clean bill of health when he left Iowa. She refunded Stevenson's $1,000 payment, but said the breeder is not responsible for vet bills. He was 100% great, or I wouldn't have sent him, Anderson said. The conflict illustrates the challenges of a U.S. dog breeding industry that has boomed to more than 1.3 million estimated puppies born in licensed facilities in 2021, but has minimal regulation, according to the Humane Society of the United States. As more Americans search online for specific dog breeds, puppy transport services have popped up to drive or fly dogs across the country. This system doesn't allow for consumer safeguards, such as buyers meeting the mother dog and seeing where she lives. I know a lot of people would purchase from a distance, said Lee County Sheriff's Department Chad Donaldson. Me, personally, I'd like to see the dogs in person. I'd like to see where they are bred and make sure I'm not inadvertently creating an environment where this can continue to happen. Iowa had 15 problem puppy breeders and dealers on the Humane Society of the United States Horrible 100 list released this week. Iowa ranked third on the list behind Missouri and Ohio. The entire Midwest is where the puppy mill industry is centered, said John Goodwin, senior director of the Society's Stop Puppy Mills campaign. As agriculture consolidated and fewer families could survive with small farms, many turned to raising pets for profit, he said. Iowa has 1,239 breeders licensed with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which means they get regular inspections, but the system is lax, Goodwin said. Even places that don't make this list are keeping dogs in terrible conditions just because the federal rules for commercial dog breeding are so poor, he said. Many breeders operate under the radar. The other, unlicensed breeders are typically more problematic, Donaldson said. We have to follow up with criminal code sections for animal neglect. There are a lot of animals typically found at these locations. They are very difficult cases. Authorities removed 131 dogs from a puppy farm near Riverside last summer. Eight dogs died from health issues, and a ninth was killed because of temperament issues related to treatment at the farm. Southeast Iowa Country Puppies sells Golden Retriever, Pomeranian, Labrador, Dachshund, and Shih Tzu puppies, according to the company website. Anderson is a licensed breeder whose most recent USDA inspections, including March 27th, found no violations. The company website says puppies are vaccinated and microchipped. Anderson and her mother, Laura Lampe, take classes every year through the Iowa Pet Breeders Association. Lampe was included on the 2017 Horrible 100 list after USDA inspections showed some dogs in need of medical treatment and unsanitary conditions, the Humane Society of the U.S. reported. Anderson said the USDA inspector who filed those reports was biased against female breeders. Once you're written up, they don't take it back, she said. It's all online for everyone to see. The family decided to put the license under Anderson's name. Goodwin said it's common for puppy breeders to change names or addresses to avoid being linked to past incidents. Juanita Swedland, a cantrell breeder, named on the 2024 Horrible 100 list, was forced to downsize this past winter after failing six USDA inspections. She operates on the farm of Steve Cruz, a repeat offender, the Iowa Capitol Dispatch reported. More than a dozen U.S. states have puppy lemon laws. Minnesota's law outlines rights for buyers and sellers. If, within 10 days after a buyer gets an animal, a veterinarian says the animal has a health problem that existed at the time of the delivery, or if the pet dies within 1 year of a hereditary defect, the animal is declared unfit for sale. If the animal dies, the pet seller must give the buyer a refund or provide an equivalent animal and reimburse them for vet bills up to the full original purchase price. Iowa Representative Dave Jacoby, a Democrat of Coralville, wants Iowa to strengthen laws to reduce the chances of animal mistreatment at puppy farms, but he's not sure the state needs a puppy lemon law. It's part of the buyer's responsibility, too, he said. If I was getting a dog from a breeder, I'd ask for names of one or two people who purchased dogs and find out why they were, how they were health-wise. In the case of Lemmy, the Papetese puppy, a veterinarian inspection, February 24th, showed no signs of infectious or communicable diseases before transport. Anderson did not have the vet check the dog's feces for worms because the pup seemed healthy, she said. After arriving in Philly, Lemmy was diagnosed with intestinal parasites, which were causing hypoglycemia and seizures, according to a text thread Stevenson shared with the Gazette. Puppy Travelers, based in Neosha, Missouri, drove Lemmy nearly 1,000 miles in a van from southeast Iowa to Philadelphia. "We met at a shopping center parking lot," Stevenson said. "My dog was only a pound. He was covered with poop and pee." Puppy Travelers, which specializes in transporting teacup puppies and kittens, has routes through 24 states, according to its website. Seven USDA license holders drive for Puppy Travelers, but none has any inspections online. The Gazette left a message for the general manager Wednesday, but he did not call back. Goodwin, with the Humane Society, said puppy transport services are riskier than rescue vans full of adult dogs because puppies have immature immune systems and can be infected by other dogs. "When are you going to inspect them?" Goodwin asked. "You can show up Monday when they leave, but that won't show the conditions inside the van during the trip." Our next story, how did Governor Kim Reynolds' legislative agenda fare this year? "I feel really good about where we landed," Iowa Governor says. This is by Caleb McCullough out of Des Moines. Speaking to lawmakers at the beginning of this year's legislative session, Governor Kim Reynolds promised a bold vision for Iowa, raising teacher pay, overhauling the agencies that help deliver special education, cutting taxes, and reorganizing large state health care and administrative systems. The Republican governor proposed more than a dozen bills this year dealing with health care, education, economic growth, and the structure of government to fellow Republicans who control both chambers of the Iowa legislature. She was able to usher in many of her proposals largely as written, but with others like the one dealing with special education undergoing significant rewrites. That special education proposal was the cornerstone of Reynolds' agenda this year. She proposed to reorganize the funding and function of the state's area education agencies, of which there are now nine, that provide special education and other services to Iowa school districts. The bill met significant resistance within her own party as House Republicans initially tabled the bill. Ultimately, a compromise was reached, retaining the AEAs as the state's primary special education providers. That same law also set the starting salary for Iowa teachers at $50,000 by 2026, increasing starting pay from its rank at the bottom half in the nation to among the highest. Current starting salary for Iowa teachers is $33,500. Reynolds also proposed a major tax bill that would have set a flat state income tax at 3.5% by next year. That bill saw significant changes as well. Leading Republican lawmakers settled on a plan that instead sets a 3.8% flat tax rate next year, which Reynolds then signed into law. Other tax measures in Reynolds' bill, including changes to the unemployment tax employers pay and cutting property taxes for child care centers did not make it into the final law. During a news conference Wednesday, Reynolds said she felt good about the results of this year's session. She said her office was working on nearly 20 bills going into the legislative session, joking that it was way too many. "We took on a lot, and I really feel good about where we landed," Reynolds said. "I'm really proud of the fact that we passed the largest teacher salary increase in the history of the state." Democrats argued during the session that Reynolds' agenda was politically motivated and did not address the major needs of Iowans in areas like housing, health care, and wages. They took specific aim at the proposed AEA changes, saying they served corporate interests and would weaken special education in Iowa. House Minority Leader Jennifer Confirst, Democrat from Windsor Heights, noted as the session came to a close that Republican lawmakers did not come into the session with AEA reform being a major goal. "The governor runs this building with Republicans. Her agenda, her politics, always center stage," Confirst said. "I continue to remind my colleagues that we are a separate branch of government and that we don't work for the governor. But the Republican leadership and Republican legislators sure act like we do." House Speaker Pat Grassley signaled support for Reynolds' policy agenda as the session ended, but he noted lawmakers reviewed and made changes to some of her proposals. "The governor laid out a very bold agenda when it came to things like the AEA issue, and we were able to work with all interested parties to, I think, really land in a really good place," Grassley said. "Not every single priority that's laid out, but some of those really high-profile ones, we were able to advance the ball on those." Education has been at the fore in Reynolds' legislative agendas in recent years, and last year she guided the passage of a private school choice program expected to cost $179 million next year. This year, Reynolds' initial plan for the area education agencies would have eliminated their services outside of special education support and diverted nearly all their funding to school districts. The districts would then have had the option to contract with an AEA or an outside party for services. After hearing from parents of students with disabilities and educators, legislative Republicans landed on a proposal that will require schools spend 90% of their state special education funding with the AEAs. Districts eventually will receive the full amount that the AEAs now receive for media and education services, and they will have broad discretion over where and how to spend it. Reynolds said previously the final law, which she signed in March, was a phenomenal place to start toward restructuring special education delivery. For Democrats, Reynolds' education agenda has been a constant target, as they've argued her policies have transferred large swaths of tax dollars from public schools to unaccountable institutions. Democrats pointed to dozens of AEA staff who have either resigned or retired this year, citing the new law as a motivating reason. "Imagine what will happen next year," Confers said. "So many unintended consequences here, and we really continue to hurt our rural communities especially. In rural Iowa, when you've got small districts, the AEAs provide those services that can't otherwise be afforded because you've got one child who needs them." Reynolds said the AEA system is changing as a result of the law, but she noted it will be a slow transition as funding for media services, education services, and special education gradually change hands. Some of the staff leaving the AEAs, she said, will likely be employed at the State Department of Education under the new Special Education Division that will oversee the agencies. Lawmakers transferred $10 million from the AEAs this year to the Education Department, which will in part support 62 new full-time employees for special education oversight. "It's still going to be bumpy. I'm not naive," Reynolds said, "but they really want to provide the best service that they can for the kids, so we're putting the kids front and center. When you do that, you'll be surprised at where we can go." Reynolds also made literacy instruction a focus this year. She proposed a bill that would allow parents to hold students back in school if they are not reading proficiently by third grade, and require a Massachusetts reading instruction test of all teachers educated at Iowa's public universities. Though that bill saw some changes in the legislature, it retained components requiring schools to create personalized reading plans for students who are behind and allowing parents to hold a student back who is not reading at grade level. Reynolds has not yet signed the bill into law. It makes all the difference in the world, and so we want to make sure that our teachers have the tools with the science of reading, she said. I'm really excited about the effort that we put into that. Reynolds proposed several health care and social services initiatives this year, including reorganizing the state's behavioral health system, extending postpartum Medicaid coverage while lowering the eligibility threshold, and making birth control available without a prescription. Two of those proposals that did not pass were the birth control measure and a proposal to provide paid parental leave to state employees. Reynolds said she was disappointed the said leave bill did not pass, the paid leave bill did not pass, which she proposed for the second time this year. What century do we live in, for heaven's sakes? Reynolds asked. They get nothing. I want young people to experience the opportunity to work for state government and to serve Iowans. The bill would have given 4 weeks of paid leave to an employee who gave birth and 1 week to a new parent who did not. Reynolds said she intends to propose the bill again next year. One of Reynolds' agenda items that passed, which she has not yet signed into law, will allow some new mothers to receive postpartum care under Medicaid for 12 months after giving birth, an increase from the 2 months currently offered. But the bill will change the income threshold for pregnant women to qualify for Medicaid coverage from 375% of the poverty line, the most generous in the nation, to 215%. An estimated 1,700 women and infants will no longer qualify for Medicaid coverage each month under the new eligibility level. The behavioral health system redesign, which Reynolds also has not yet signed, will eliminate Iowa's existing mental health and substance abuse treatment networks and bring the services under a unified behavioral health network with 7 regions administered by local agencies. Reynolds' health officials said during the session that money for those services was not being efficiently spent, and centralizing the system will improve service delivery. Reynolds proposed one of several competing proposals to spend money out of the state's opioid settlement fund, which holds more than $25 million won in lawsuit settlements with companies over their role in fueling the opioid crisis. The bill called for about $20 million in spending on specific projects. Lawmakers debated different proposals in the final hours of the session, but failed to reach an agreement, leaving the funds unspent for the second year in a row. Later in the session, Reynolds proposed a bill that would define terms like man, woman, male, and female in state law to reflect a person's sex assigned at birth. Lawmakers did not pass it. The bill caused an outcry from transgender and LGBTQ Iowans who said it was an attempt to erase transgender people and discriminate against them. An early version of the bill would have required a transgender person's driver's license to include both their pre- and post-transition sex. That bill passed out of a House committee, but it was not brought up for a vote and died. Following up on a large state government reorganization law she signed last year, Reynolds proposed a bill this year to reorganize the boards and commissions that oversee administrative rules and large expanses of the state government. Rather than taking up Reynolds' bill, House Republicans proposed a much slimmer bill that would eliminate the boards and commissions that had only bipartisan consensus. Through negotiations with Senate Republicans who took up Reynolds' bill as proposed, lawmakers passed an agreement to eliminate or merge more than 70 boards and commissions. Among those boards being eliminated are minority-focused commissions serving the African American community, Asians and Pacific Islanders, Native Americans, Latinos, women, and persons with disabilities. The bill also takes rulemaking authorities away from several boards, vesting it instead in the executive agencies that oversee them, which report to the governor. It just kind of follows along what we've been trying to do to streamline state government, Reynolds said of the bill. As scrutiny increases among national policymakers over entities from countries like China owning land in the United States, Reynolds proposed and signed a bill that increases restrictions on foreign owners of agricultural land. Iowa law already has significant restrictions on foreign entities that own farmland. The new law requires foreign owners of farmland to report more to state officials and gives the Attorney General more power to investigate and punish entities that don't comply. I'm going to turn to the government notes section. Cedar Rapids Building Redevelopment receives $2.17 million boost. Also, trail detours scheduled near McLeod Run in Cedar Rapids. This is by Grace King and Marissa Payne. The Iowa Economic Development Authority last week awarded $2.165 million toward local developer Steve Emerson's redevelopment of the old Dragon Building on the Guaranty Bank block. The award was part of more than $19 million allocated to transform 12 historic buildings across Iowa through the state's Historic Preservation Tax Credit Program. The three-story brick building at 329 2nd Avenue Southeast is where the Dragon Restaurant, long Cedar Rapids' only Chinese restaurant, was located for 55 years. It most recently held the Hazard County Saloon until the business moved across the street in 2018. The 14,400-square-foot commercial building is slated to be transformed into 13 apartments on the second and third floors, 5 studio, 7 one-bedroom units, and 1 two-bedroom unit. The first-floor commercial space would be taken up by a tenant who provides fitness coaching, Emerson has said. The project will honor the building's history. The spelling of the building's name has varied over the years, but records show it was referred to for the longest period as the Meskwaki Building, which became its historical name. It was built in 1897 by Ben Hines and designed by W.A. Fulkerson, who wanted to honor the Meskwaki Native American tribe. By supporting the restoration and revitalization of historic buildings, we not only preserve the architectural heritage of our communities, but also breathe new life into them, creating vibrant spaces for generations to come, Debbie Durham, director of IEDA and the Iowa Finance Authority, said in a news release. The tax credits support projects that rehabilitate underused or vacant historic buildings while maintaining their historic features. Work completed on buildings must meet the Federal Secretary of Interior standards. The most recent application round opened in January. IEDA received 13 applications, seeking more than $37 million in tax credits. Projects are scored based on readiness, financing, and local support and participation. Waterway cleanup causing temporary trail detours. City of Cedar Rapids crews will remove 2020 derecho debris from wooded areas near McLeod Run and the Cedar Valley Nature Trail between today and July 15. Damaged and fallen vegetative materials will be cleared from about 21 acres of waterways and floodplains. Trail detours at J Avenue and 29th Street and McLeod Place and 42nd Street Northeast will occur at different times through the duration of the project. Trail users will be notified of closures and details through signage before construction. Iowa City Council Commission to discuss City Park Pool. The Iowa City Council and the City's Parks and Recreation Commission will meet for a work session Tuesday to discuss the results of a survey regarding the future of City Park Pool. The meeting will begin at 4 p.m. in Emma Harvett Hall at 410 East Washington Street. The agenda includes receipt of a report from the project consultant team about community input results and project recommendations. The Iowa City Council voted last year to replace the iconic 76-year-old pool for reasons that include water loss, accessibility, health and safety, and sustainability. The city and its consultants have solicited input on 4 pool designs from the public. More than 1,000 people completed a survey, the results of which will be discussed at Tuesday's meeting. The meeting is open to the public, however, public comment is not permitted during work sessions. The council will select a preferred concept at a later date. The selected concept design will be further refined before bidding to incorporate any additional direction from the City Council, such as design elements, budget considerations, and unknown site conditions. Construction on the pool is slated to begin in August, lasting through 2026. The pool will be closed in 2025. Additional information, including the 4 pool designs, can be found online at icgov.org/jumpin. jump in, I should say. Marion to host Migratory Bird and Arbor Day celebration. Marion's Migratory Bird and Arbor Day celebration is planned from noon to 3 p.m. Saturday at Thomas Park. Activities include guided bird hikes, tree climbing demonstrations, a live raptor presentation, and a monarch bio tent with live butterflies. There will be informational displays, handcrafted wood items for sale, and make and take crafts. Find the full schedule at www.cityofmarion.org/birdfriendly. I'm going to turn now to the insight opinion section and read the community letters. We have two this morning. The first is from Mary Beth Waldman of Boone. Reynolds should sign crucial vape directory bill. Now that both chambers of the Iowa legislature have passed the vape directory bill, House File 2677, Governor Kim Reynolds must make it a priority to sign the bill into law. This bill cracks down on the sale of illegal vaping products and will positively impact public health and safety. As a retailer in the state, I proudly support these efforts to remove illegal products from circulation to help ensure that all retailers are stocking their shelves with legal products. By establishing a clear directory for retailers to refer to, the bill will help address the millions of unauthorized vaping products that easily bypass our own federal health and safety regulations, pouring into this country from China. In my store, I responsibly stock my shelves with products that have met the Food and Drug Administration's highest and most rigorous standards, but I am constantly forced to compete with unscrupulous actors willingly selling illegal vaping products. Opponents of the bill argue against what they perceive as undue regulatory burdens. However, their resistance misses the broader point. This bill is not about stifling business or imposing unnecessary regulations. It's about ensuring consumer safety and fair competition. By opposing this legislation, these retailers effectively align themselves with the foreign manufacturers who continue to spread unregulated and potentially harmful vaping products into our country. By signing this bill immediately, Reynolds can send a clear message that Iowa is committed to supporting responsible retailers and combating the illicit vape market. Again, by Mary Beth Waldman from Boone. Remington is a solid Democrat. This is from Micah Covington. Oh, my name is Micah Jane Covington. I'm a Democrat supporting Mandy Remington for Johnson County Supervisor. I became an Iowan and Iowa Democrat in 2012 because Iowa protects transgender people. I've put in countless hours volunteering and working for different Democrats, from President Barack Obama to Stacey Appel to Senator Bernie Sanders. I've served as a member of the Pottawatomie, Polk, and Johnson County Democratic Party Central Committees. Also at my local college, I created a College Democrats Club. I know a solid Democrat when I see one. Mandy is a solid Democrat. She has the experience and dedication it takes to lift up the voices of the working class. Mandy is a single parent, a domestic violence survivor, and a nonprofit leader. She's dedicated to ensuring everyone has their basic human needs met, including affordable housing, health care, child care, and food security. As a transgender woman, I know that Mandy has my back because she took time from her work nearly weekly to go to the state capitol and advocate for trans and non-binary people, especially trans children. But she didn't just lobby against the state's hateful legislation. She helped carry the energy forward to fight when Governor Kim Reynolds refused federal funding to boost food aid over the summer. Fighting the hate directed against people like me shows solidarity. But few would be committed enough to sacrifice further on the spot. And again, that was from Micah Covington of Iowa City. You are listening to the Cedar Rapids Gazette on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. I'm your reader, Teresa Whitaker. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, give us a call at 515-243-6833. And now we'll turn to today's obituaries. Robert Bob Majors of Mount Vernon was 88 when he passed away on Wednesday, October 25th at home. I'm sorry, that's Wednesday, October 25th, 2023, at home in Mount Vernon, Iowa, surrounded by family. A graveside service will be Saturday, May 11th, 2024 at 1 p.m. at Mount Vernon Cemetery. Reception will follow at 2 p.m. at Gwen's Restaurant in Lisbon for a celebration of life. Mary Claire Gurink Doyle of Madison, Wisconsin, formerly of Davenport and Cedar Rapids, a retired real estate broker and loving mother and grandmother, passed away on April 23rd at the age of 93. Beloved wife of the late Ed Doyle, loving mother to Sean and Susan Doyle of Trophy Club, Texas, Shailene Doyle of Madison, Wisconsin, Bridget Smith of Denver, Colorado, and late daughter Erin Doyle. Caring sister to Margot Carney and her husband Jerry of Hatfield, Pennsylvania. Ann Condon of Davenport and Elizabeth Boo McLaughlin of Valrico, Florida. Proud Oma to Ryan Smith and his wife Dana of Lakewood, Colorado. Molly Smith of Denver, Colorado. Connor Doyle of Los Angeles, California. And Kristen Sullivan and her husband Kyle of Burlington, Massachusetts. Great-grandmother to Patrick Sullivan. Funeral services for Mary Claire will be held at 10 a.m. on June 22nd, 2024, at Our Lady of Victory Catholic Church, 4105 North Division Street in Davenport. In lieu of flowers, please donate to the Catherine McCauley Center in Cedar Rapids. Donald Roz Allen Rosnow of Tipton. Don went to rest on April 30th. Visitation for Don was held at the Fry Funeral Home in Tipton on Friday, May 3rd from 4 to 7 p.m. A funeral service was held on May 4th at 1 p.m. at the Fry Funeral Home, in which all friends and family were welcome. The family requested no flowers be sent and that any desired donations be made on behalf of Don and directed to the Cedar Manor Nursing Home in Tipton. Don passed away peacefully at the Cedar Manor Nursing Home in Tipton with a family member by his side. Don was born March 29, 1935, on a farm northwest of Erling, Iowa, to Pearlie and Loretta Albers Rosnow. The family moved to a farm east of Persia, where he attended country school until his family moved to Tennant in 1943. Don graduated from Tennant High School in 1953. He worked for farmers during his high school years, and his favorite sport... Changed. I'm going to find where I left off in just one second. Okay, sorry about that. He worked for farmers during his high school years, and his favorite sport was basketball. He was selected for the all-county basketball team as a sophomore and was offered a basketball scholarship to Simpson College upon his high school graduation. He was also honored by one of his fellow Tennant alumni to have been selected as one of the top all-time five best basketball players to have played for the Tennant High School. In the fall of 1953, Don went to work for the city of Harlan as a meter reader. In 1954, he became a water plant operator for the city of Harlan. He was united in marriage with Lois Gow, December 7, 1956. On July 1, 1958, he began to work for the city of Tipton as both a meter reader and apprentice lineman. In May of 1966, he became the electrical superintendent for the city of Tipton and retired from the job on October 1, 1994, after spending 41 years in public service. Upon retirement, Don enjoyed farming on his farm southwest of Tipton and raising Black Angus cattle. He retired from this operation at the age of 85. He enjoyed family, farming, fishing, hunting, and vacationing in Tucson, Arizona during the winter. He was preceded in death by his parents, brother Kenneth Rosnow, and his wife Mildred, his sister Marjorie Kramer, and her brother Robert, and her husband Robert. He is survived by his wife of 67 years, Lois, one son, Craig Rosnow of Bourbonneau, Illinois, two daughters, Cindy, spouse Kevin Licht, of Tipton, and Carol Rosnow of Omaha, Nebraska. He also has three grandsons, Dr. Andrew, spouse Mandy Rosnow, Eric Licht, Michael Rosnow, and two granddaughters, Sarah Licht Dr. Melissa Spouse-Stefanos Delioglo, and one great-grandson, Gavin, and one great-granddaughter, Deborah. Harlan Frederick Dierberg, 89, of Loudon, passed away May 1st, surrounded by his loving family. There will be no service but a private burial later at Van Horn Cemetery in Loudon. Harlan is survived by his wife of 70 years, Florence, daughter Pamela, spouse Carrie Lochner, two sons, Alan, spouse Lois Dierberg, and Dwayne Dierberg, four grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents, two sisters, two brothers, and a granddaughter. Harlan was born October 1, 1934, in Loudon, to Anton and Augusta Dierberg. He married Florence Crosthwaite, June 5, 1954. He enjoyed his family, sports, and playing cards. Francis Eugene Jean Bragg, age 80, of Iowa City, died Friday, May 3rd at UIHC Downtown Mercy Hospital in Iowa City. Jean was born December 19, 1943 in Monticello, the son of William J. and Marion E. McKeever Bragg. Growing up in Iowa City, Jean graduated from City High School in 1962, then enlisted in the United States Air Force, serving from 1963 to 1967. On November 2, 1968, he married Jane A. Pfeiffer in Iowa City, where they made their home. For several years, he worked at the post office before beginning his career as an electrician in the area for many years. Jean was a member of the American Legion, Loyal Order of Moose, Fraternal Order of Eagles, and was a longtime member of the Rod Benders Bass Club. Over the years, he enjoyed hunting, fishing, playing cards, camping, and traveling with his wife, Jane, and following his fellow Air Force friends on Facebook. His family includes his wife, Jane, sister Sheila Farmer, sister-in-law Joyce Rosenberger, brothers-in-law Robert Pfeiffer, spouse Carla, Joseph Pfeiffer, spouse Sally, Thomas Pfeiffer, and Patrick Pfeiffer, seven nieces and nephews, and 10 great-nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his parents, in-laws Bernard M. and Irene F. Sheets Pfeiffer, and brothers-in-law Jay Rosenberger and Bill Farmer. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, May 9th, at Gay and Seehoff Funeral and Cremation Service, with burial to follow at Memory Garden Cemetery, where military honors will be bestowed. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at the funeral home. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations will be given to several different charities important to Jean and Jane. Elmer John Klein, Jr., 88, of Cedar Rapids, died Friday, May 3rd at Mercy Medical Center. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, May 8th at Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center in Cedar Rapids, located at 2121 Bowling Street Southwest. Celebration of Life services will be 10:30 a.m. Thursday, May 9th at Brosh Chapel Burial will be in Linwood Cemetery, where full military rites will be conducted. Elmer was born May 27, 1935 in Iowa City, the son of John Robert and Iona V. Ward Klein. He served in the United States Army from 1953 to 1956 during the Korean conflict. John was united in marriage to Kathy Hollingshead on May 2, 1992. He worked at Quaker Oats for over 42 and a half years, retiring in 1995 as a supervisor. John was active with the Hanford American Legion Post 5 for many years, serving as Sergeant of Arms from 1995 to 2008. He was a member of St. Mark's Methodist Church and the NRA. He enjoyed hunting, fishing, golfing, and most of all spending time with his family, especially the grandchildren. John is survived by his wife Kathy, children John, spouse Sue Klein, Lynn Schroth, Holly, spouse Randy Olette, Wendy Williams, Kim, spouse Rod Staub, and Ty, spouse Julie Hansen. 25 grandchildren, 36 great-grandchildren, 4 great-great-grandchildren, his son-in-law, Rick Barger, his sisters-in-law, Betty Klein and Connie Klein, as well as nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his parents, daughter Julie Barger, and his brothers, Delmar, George, Robert, and Kenneth, an infant sister, Hazel, and a son-in-law, Dale Schroth. Mildred Millie May Schreiner, 86, of Belle Plaine, passed away May 1st at Belle Plaine Specialty Care in Belle Plaine. Millie was born in Keyston, January 18, 1938, the daughter of John Henry Peters and Mabel Lanham Peters. She grew up in Belle Plaine, attending Belle Plaine High School. Following school, Millie married Nathan Rupp. To this union, five children were born. The couple later went their separate ways. Millie was later married to Glenn Schreiner at the Little Brown Church in Nashua. She worked several part-time jobs. She was a dependable employee. Millie enjoyed painting, reading, watching masterpiece theater. She and Glenn would often go camping and enjoyed trips with friends. She loved her grandchildren and step-grandchildren. She is survived by her children, Nicole Rupp of Cedar Rapids, Shelley Rupp of Des Moines, Heidi Miner of Belle Plaine, Lori, spouse Jim Peterson of Washington, grandchildren Hannah Murphy, Addison Cooperider, stepchildren Connie, spouse Dana Horst, Cheryl, spouse Roger Yellick, Glenda Mann, step-grandchildren Clint McWilliams, Travis McWilliams, Shanna Heishman, Mick Yellick, Rob Yellick, Linda Schreiner, Joy Mann, Jeremy Mann, and 13 great-grandchildren. Millie was preceded in death by her parents, husband Glenn, son Brian Rupp, brother Dean Peters, stepdaughter Glenda Mann. Herbeck Newhouse Funeral Service is assisting the family in their time of need. Per Millie's request, there will be no services. Claudia Elizabeth Taylor, 71, of Cedar Rapids, passed away May 2nd from complications of Alzheimer's disease and vascular dementia. A celebration of life will be held Friday, May 10th at 10 a.m., First Congregational Church in Cedar Rapids. She is survived by her husband of 51 years, Paul Taylor, three daughters, Andrea, Elizabeth, and Stephanie, all of Cedar Rapids, four grandchildren, Natalie Voss of Ankeny, Trent Voss, Cecilia Smith, and Keegan Seeley, all of Cedar Rapids, a brother, Tom Wortman of Cedar Rapids, many nieces and nephews, and her beloved cat, Willie. She was preceded in death by her parents, three siblings, Jane Jeffries, Julie Dyson, and David Wortman. She was born to George and Helen Wortman in Cedar Rapids on December 31, 1952. Claudia was a graduate of Kennedy High School in 1971 and Kirkwood Community College. She worked as a postpartum LPN at St. Luke's for 35 years. Claudia and her sister Julie Dyson volunteered for the Robbins Fire Department for many years. She was an active member of First Congregational Church for 48 years and served as a member of the diaconate. The family wishes to thank the staff of Northbrook Manor and Unity Point Hospice of the wonderful care they gave to Claudia. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made to the American Heart Association or First Congregational Church. Okay, I'm going to turn to the sports section and let you know what's going on today. In the area, we've got girls golf with Marion hosting Wamek Tournament in Gardner Golf Course at 9 a.m. Jefferson Prairie Xavier Liberty at MVC Mississippi Meet in Cedar Falls at the Pheasant Ridge Golf Course at 9:30 a.m. and Regina at West Branch Cedar's Edge Golf Course at 4 p.m. Boys Golf, West Branch at Regina at Brown Deer Golf Course at 4 p.m. Marion at Wamek Tournament at Vinton Shellsburg, the Wildcat Golf Course at 9 a.m. Girls Tennis Regionals are taking place. And in boys soccer, Cedar Falls is at Prairie at 7 p.m. this evening, and West Branch is at Regina at 5 p.m. In girls soccer, we have Williamsburg at Marion at 5 p.m., Regina at West Branch at 5 p.m., Prairie at Cedar Falls at 6:45 p.m., City High at Dubuque Senior at 7:15 p.m. In men's golf, Kirkwood is at the NJCAA District Meet in Waterloo at the Gates Park Golf Club. On TV today, you can catch the NBA playoffs. Pacers are at the Knicks at 6:30 p.m. this evening on TNT and True TV. Timberwolves are at the Nuggets at 9 p.m. also on TNT and True TV. The NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, we have the Bruins at the Panthers at 7 p.m. on ESPN. In Major League Baseball, the Tigers at the Guardians at 5 p.m. on FS1. White Sox at Rays, 5:30 p.m. on NBCS Chicago. Padres at the Cubs, 6:30 p.m. on Marquee. In pro soccer, we have Salernitana versus Atlanta at 11 a.m. on CBS Sports Network, and Crystal Palace versus Manchester United at 2 p.m. on USA. In college golf, we have PGA Works Collegiate at 2 p.m. on the Golf Channel, and high school softball, Strike Out the Stigma, at 5 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. on KCRG 9.2. You can also listen to the Padres at the Cubs at 6:30 p.m. this evening on KXIC 800. And now we'll see what we have on the front page. Baez has no hamate bones left to break. H-A-M-A-T-E. Never heard of those bones, but that's the headline. Leads Colonels to win Sunday over Peoria with two hits, including a home run. This is by Jeff Johnson. It's all in the way you look at it. Nate Baez of the Cedar Rapids Colonels broke the hamate bone in his left hand while he was playing college baseball at Arizona State. He broke the hamate bone in his right hand at the end of minor league spring training last year. That's a lot of missed playing time because of a couple of unlucky breaks, puns intended. But Baez figures things thusly. I can't do it again, he said, after the Colonels beat Peoria 6-0 on a gorgeous Sunday afternoon at Veterans Memorial Stadium. He's exactly right. They surgically remove the hamate, if you didn't know, which is a hooked-shaped bone at the bottom of the hand near the wrist. You break it through repetitive motions such as swinging a bat. Injuries are never a good thing, but it is what it is, Baez said. You just kind of have to accept it and go on. Take the time out, come back, and do my best when I was back. They were a long few months. Mostly a catcher, Baez didn't play any games last season until late July. A 12th round draft pick of the Twins in 2022 out of Arizona State, he's shown promise at the plate in the few professional games he's gotten into, 19 in 2022 and 32 in 2023. He's had a slow first month of the Midwest League season for the Colonels, but smashed a solo home run over the deck in left field in the second inning here, 107-mile-per-hour exit velocity, drove in another run with a single in the third, and added a walk and a run in the seventh. The RBIs were his first two this season. When he has played, he's been good, said Colonels manager Brian Dinkelman. He's been hurt, hasn't gotten a lot of consistent playing time. The first month probably didn't go the way that he wanted it to, but this week was good for him. He got that home run today, hit one off the wall the other night. He had a big two-out RBI today also. A good day for Nate. Just sticking to my process, sticking to my plan, and just trying to do my absolute best out there, Baez said. Control what I can control. Whatever else happens, happens. The Colonels won the final five games of this six-game series to improve to 15-11. They went 8-4 in a two-week homestand. Jordan Carr got a spot pitching start Sunday for Cedar Rapids and threw four one-hit innings. Then it was Kyle Bischoff, Jacob Wozinski, and Juan Mercedes in that order to finish off the shutout. The Colonels head to South Bend for six games beginning Tuesday. Then it's right back home for a series against Quad Cities. We've been playing better, said Dinkelman. We got off to a slower start there, been up and down. The pitching has been pretty solid most of the time. Hitters are starting to find their way a little bit, having been at bats, getting some good swings off. So yeah, the last couple of weeks have been better. I think I will read the sideline column here with a few short articles. In boys golf, postseason golf opens play this week. The Iowa High School Athletic Association opens postseason golf this week. Some Class 1A and 2A sectionals will be held Tuesday, while the remaining sectionals in those classes and all 3A are slated for Wednesday. The top two individuals, including ties from non-qualifying teams, will advance to district May 13th. The top two teams and the third-place team, if the host school places first or second, also advance. The state tournaments will be held May 20th and 21st in Ames. West Delaware will host a 3A sectional at Pin Oaks Links. The field includes Marion, Anamosa, CPU, Decorah, Maquoketa, Solon, and Waukon. Iowa City Regina will compete in a 1A sectional Tuesday, hosted by Mid Prairie at Kelowna Golf Course. The Regals and Golden Hawks will face Central Lee, Minneapolis, Tipton, Van Buren, West Branch, and West Liberty. Qualifiers will move on to district at Pleasant Valley Golf Course in Iowa City, hosted by Regina. In college softball, Hawkeyes take series finale against Illinois. The Iowa softball team took the series finale against Illinois 6-5 in 8 innings on Sunday afternoon at Eichelberger Field in Champaign, Illinois. Jalen Adams got the start for the Hawkeyes, who are 18-28 and 6-17 in the Big Ten, allowing only one hit over 2 innings. Grace Baines and Briley Klosterman went a combined 5-for-6 at the plate with 2 RBIs in the game. Cyclones fall at home to Central Florida. Out of Ames, Iowa State wrapped up its regular season Sunday, falling to UCF at the Cyclones Sports Complex 4-0. Iowa State, whose record is 20-30 and 6-18 in the Big 12, was held to just 2 hits on the day on singles from Malaysia Akoa and Angelina Allen. Panthers hold off rally to win at Valparaiso. The Northern Iowan softball team, whose record is 31-16 and 18-5 in the MVC, escaped a late Valparaiso rally, scoring a pair of extra inning runs to take down the Beacons 4-2 in Sunday's Missouri Valley regular season finale. And in college baseball, Iowa drops Northwestern in extra innings. Iowa defeated Northwestern 6-5 in 13 innings on Sunday afternoon at Duane Banks Field. After Michael Seegers doubled in the 13th, Kellen Strohmeyer brought him home to end the game with a single to left center in just his 17th at-bat of the season. I'm going to turn to a story now out of Cedar Rapids. Kirkwood claims Region 11A title. This is in college softball. The Eagles advance to NJCAA District Tournament. Kirkwood softball had its back against the proverbial wall. The Eagles faced elimination for 3 straight games and fought back, swinging in each to keep their season alive. Top-seeded Kirkwood completed the comeback, avenging a loss and sweeping Iowa Central for the National Junior College Athletic Association Division II Region 11A softball tournament title Sunday at home. The Eagles won the opener 8-0 in 6 innings and closed with an 11-3 victory in 5 innings for the title. "We understood what happened and how the game went," Kirkwood's Lexi Hines said about Saturday's loss to the Tritons and 17-1 consolation win over Northeast Community College. "We just played as hard as we could for the last game yesterday and these 2 games today." Kirkwood, whose record is 49-12, scored 19 total runs on 18 hits over the final and the winner-take-all if game, giving them 36 runs in 3 elimination contests. "Hitting is contagious, one way or the other," Kirkwood coach Eric Fries said. "When it goes bad, it can go bad. When you start catching a few barrels, everybody starts hitting better. Once that first barrel happens, everyone follows suit. The runs come. I was very, very proud of them." In the deciding game, Iowa Central, whose record is 37-21, landed the first punch. Kennedy Palmer led off the game with a triple, and Jada Long followed with an RBI ground out. Kirkwood retaliated right away. Rachel Schlatter opened the bottom of the first with a triple down the first baseline and scored on Brenna Ross's single, which sparked an 8-run frame. Sailor Hall cleared the bases with a 3-run double, and Hines added a 2-run single. All but one Kirkwood batter scored, and 12 stepped to the plate in the first. The Eagles transferred their confidence from Game 1. "It was huge," Hines said. "Rachel's triple got us all going. We were hyped to play them again. We just did a good all-round job today." Hines drove in Kaya Johnson and Delia Schwartz with a base hit in the second. She went 2-for-2 with 4 RBIs and a run in the finale. The offense was just as potent in the first game, receiving 3 hits and 3 RBIs from Ross, who drove in Schlatter for the final run, enacting the mercy rule. The Eagles haven't played their last game at home. The double dip over the Tritons earned a district tournament appearance. Kirkwood will host the Region 9 champion for a best-of-3 series on May 10th and 11th for a berth to the NJCAA National Tournament held May 20th to 25th in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Okay, and we just have a few minutes left. I'm going to go back to the government notes section because I didn't get quite finished. Outdoor movies returning to Marion Neighborhood Parks. The Marion Parks and Recreation Department and I'm On Communications announced the Movies on the Move series will return. An outdoor movie will be shown on one Friday per month in June, July, and August at select neighborhood parks in Marion. The 2024 season includes June 21st, Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 3, at Hanna Park at 775 Fairview Drive. July 26th, Barbie at Ascension Park at 875 South 22nd Street. And on August 16th, E.T. at Prairie Hill Park at 5133 29th Avenue. This is separate from the Moonlight Movie Series sponsored by Hills Bank at the Klopfenstein Amphitheater at Low Park. Three outdoor movie nights are planned on Fridays, including June 7th, Wonka, July 19th, Minions, Rise of Gru, and August 2nd, Super Mario Brothers. There, inflatables will be available each evening starting at 7, and face painting will be offered for a fee. The feature presentation will begin around 8 p.m. Outside food and drink are allowed, but snack vendors will be on site during each event. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. I'm your reader, Teresa Whitaker. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.